Welcome to the latest edition of the Insurers the Best Policy podcast. I'm David Bull, and today I'm joined by Louis Iglesias, CEO of Allied World. Allied World is now part of Fairfax Financial and operates across multiple geographies, including the US, Bermuda, London, Europe, and Asia, primarily in insurance, but also in reinsurance. Today, we're going to cover a lot of ground, from helping clients through the challenges of COVID-19 and the economic downturn, hard market conditions, the threat of self-insurance, the impact of new capital and profitable growth opportunities, including in reinsurance. So, Lou, there's been a lot of focus on the industry response to COVID-19, but I wanted to start by asking you as a carrier, what are some of the challenges your customers have faced as a result of the pandemic, and how have you tried to help them through those challenges?
Thank you, David, and thanks for having me on today. Well, the challenges that our customers are facing is, it's similar to, what you're seeing in the total global economy, right? So, I mean, first of all, the obvious health issues, right? So we feel for, any of our customers who have had to deal firsthand with, the health issues of COVID. But just, from a business standpoint, the largest issue that everybody is facing is what's going to happen with the global economy, right? So revenues are down, if you're a manufacturer, your widget sales are down. You see what's happening with retail, with foot traffic. We see what's happening not only in the United States, but also, we have a global business. So we have clients throughout Europe and Asia. And different than some of the other crises that we've had to face in our industry, this is really a global phenomenon, right? So we've been through 9/11, the economic crisis, we've been through that as well in 08. And these were different types of crises. These were, first of all, I would say they were horrible, especially 9/11, but less global, right? Yeah. So what you're facing today, and many of our customers are global customers, is what they're talking to us about is what's going to happen with exposure bases, right? What's going to happen with revenue? What's going to happen with margin, right? And many of these things are very hard to predict. Revenues, exposure bases, budgets, right? So how do you budget going forward? How much money is left in that pot to buy insurance after you budget for the rest of your company? What is the revenue going to be? Okay, so you have all those things. So how have we been trying to help? I mean, really, we've been listening. We're trying to take it client by client. Different industries have different challenges. The construction industry, is having project delays and, their challenges are, can they, if they bought a three-year program on a project, how's that going to get extended? How are insurance companies going to respond on audits, right? On minimum premiums, on all those things, right? Those are all areas where, as an industry, we have to listen and we have to understand that our customers need our help, in these times. And we have to listen. We have to do what we think is the right thing. And so, we'll make decisions as appropriate. But, we're here to listen. And it's a very, very tough time for many of our customers.
Yeah, no, for sure. And in practical terms, I mean, as a company, how have you adapted to that new normal in terms of the steps you've taken to make sure your operations, continue to function and engage both with each other, but also with your brokers and clients?
Yeah, no, great question. Just like everybody else, we were one day in March, we were all working in the office and everything was fine. And then, a day or two later, we're all working from home. And again, globally and happening in different stages globally, right? So our operations in Asia, especially in Hong Kong, were out a little sooner than that, right? So we were dealing with some of this over in Asia first. So we did have a little bit of an idea of what could happen. But we went remote quickly. And for us, it was very successful. Our IT staff had us prepared for it pretty well, even though, nobody could have known what was going to happen. But, last year we went on to the Teams system, which really for us was very, very good. We were able to make the move to everybody working remotely quickly and successfully, thankfully, right? And it's worked out for us. So we're able to communicate with each other. So we did well with the transition. And then to me, it's all about communication, right? And I think it would be hard to be able to be successful in this atmosphere if you didn't already have a company that communicated well with each other. If you didn't already have a company that had resilient people and a resilient culture, and fortunately for us, thankfully, I believe we had that already. And we talk about this within the company. The culture carries you through the hard times. And so, if on March 1st, a company had a weak culture and they weren't communicating with each other well. On April 1st, in working remotely, they weren't all of a sudden going to be able to run that company successfully, right? So the culture carries you through, and we just continue to communicate. I mean, I have frequent calls company-wide talking about, you know, where we are as a company and what we're doing, you know, in this situation and how we're performing. You know, my senior team does the same with all their folks. Employers having virtual happy hours. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening as far as people talking to each other. You know, we're doing the same with brokers. You know, over the past couple of weeks, we've had, you know, a number of, you know, senior broker calls. And so we're continuing to do that. And clients, I mean, our client engagement team has done a great job of keeping us close with our customers and understanding their needs. So it's communication, it's resiliency. You know, the longer we go on with this type of work environment, I think the more people have to understand that we have to continue to be resilient, right? It's not, you know, 2, 3, 4 months is a long time, but
right.
8, 9, 10, 12 months is even longer. And it becomes easier to lose focus. So we have to make sure that we're even stepping it up now and communicating and keeping focus, being there for our customers, and being able to run our business, you know, the way that, you know, we need to. So,
yeah, absolutely. And we're going to return to, I guess, how you deal with clients through this difficult time and shortly. But so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the sort of market conditions. And of course, you know, it's widely acknowledged we're in a hard market across almost all lines of business. But where are you currently seeing the most significant price increases across your book? And what would you say are the main drivers in those areas?
The rate increase environment that we're in today started before COVID, right? Well before COVID. Right. So we're already in that that environment. And I think, you know, one of the things that COVID situation did is it accelerated a lot of things, right? It accelerated, you know, I'll go off topic for 1 second. I'll come back to it. But the business world was already moving more towards a, you know, remote work environment, and it's accelerated that. And I think when we do come back after we get past this, and we will after we get past this, there'll be more liberal work from home policies throughout every industry, I think, because, you know, I can tell you for us, you know, I feel like we've done it successfully, but you do want to get back to in person because you want to maintain your culture. You want to be able to train people. You know, that's very important in our business. But I think, you know, there will be a little bit more of a liberal work from home policy throughout a lot of industries. So, but I also think it accelerated some of the rate environment because it introduced uncertainty into our business, more uncertainty. Right. When there's uncertainty of recent events that are not incorporated in our actuarial tables going backwards, that is an outlier event, right? So it introduces uncertainty. It takes all of the estimates that everybody made based on past events in our actuarial tables and says, well, these aren't in there. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, that's a driver. But even before that, and I'll get into some of the technical things, but if you just take a step back from the technical things and you say, is the world today a safer place for insurance carriers or a more dangerous place for insurance carriers, right? And all you have to do is watch the news and you'll see, you know, you'll see the most active hurricane season ever, right? And you'll see, you know, whatever, I don't get into politics, but whatever your politics are, there is something happening with the climate for sure. And it's not a good thing for the insurance industry. Okay, so you have that. You have fires. You have the wildfires like you've never seen before. So, you know, again, the intensity of it is not captured in the actuarial tables, right? So another kind of new thing that drives uncertainty into the business. So you have that. You have what I would call tort financing. So you have these investment companies now that are calling around saying, oh, invest in tort cases, you know, and we'll get a piece of the winnings, right? So that's another relatively new thing, you know, that's out, that's, you know, driving the marketplace. And capacity pullbacks, you know, that's driving the marketplace. You know, you have situations now where, you know, carriers have, you know, gotten over their skis in the amount of capacity that they have out, and they've been pulling back. That's been happening for a while, continues to happen. So today, where, you know, you may have, for one of our customers to put together a $300 million tower 2, 3 years ago, maybe 4 carriers could do that. Today, if you can even find that much, it's, you know, 15 carriers.
Right.
You're in a world where $5 million of limit is relevant. So that is a big driver as well of what we're seeing in this marketplace. And then, you know, you look at the results. Yeah, 2016, I think we were, you know, the industry was over 100 combined, maybe 100.6. 2017, 103.7. 2018, 99.2. Right. So the industry has not made money. You know, that's also driving some of what we're doing. I mean, you know, what we do as an industry, we're not really good at advertising our industry, but, you know, it's a really important function. And so, again, getting away from the technical stuff, you know, what does our industry do? I mean, we collect premiums for the global economy in order to spread the risk of the global economy in an orderly way.
Right.
That's what we do. So we collect premiums into a bucket and we pay it out in an orderly way so that the global economy avoids shocks, can run smoothly. You know, I would say we're the oil of the engine in the global economy. And when that bucket doesn't have enough money in it to be able to perform that function in an efficient way, that's an issue. Right. So part of what's driving this marketplace is that that spread of risk needs to at least be enough money to pay, you know, to pay out losses. And when the losses include many new things that are not contemplated in some of the history of the industry, that drives market. Right. And so I'm giving a bit of a long-winded explanation, but I think there are a lot of factors there that we don't normally think about. And you could add to it, you know, kind of the old fashioned stuff, like interest rates are really low.
Yeah.
So, you know, investment income, you know, is not really there in a way that's going to offset underwriting loss. Right. And so for me, the way I was brought up in the business, you separate those two things. You know, we're an underwriting company.
Right.
And so we need to make an underwriting profit, and investment income will come and go. But I don't believe you could depend on that for the success of your company in this business.
Sure. And just briefly, I know you've given a very excellent sort of broad explanation of the drivers, but as you're looking across your portfolio, which areas would you say are currently hardest?
Well, look, I would say that, you know, the areas that were the softest are now the ones that are getting more rate than others. But, you know, they kind of needed it based on the loss pictures that we're seeing. You know, so you're seeing casualty, you know, excess casualty, D&O, property to a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a lesser extent, even though I feel it probably needs a little bit more. Yeah. And geographically, you know, for the Bermuda marketplace, you know, this market is a Bermuda marketplace type of market because there's a need for capacity.
Yeah.
Right. And so at Allied World, we're trying to fill some of those needs. And we have a very strong Bermuda operation. And so, you know, we're seeing, you know, strength in the Bermuda marketplace. We're seeing strength throughout Europe. We're seeing strength throughout the U.S. marketplace. We're even seeing, you know, some rate strengthening throughout Asia, which is, you know, you don't really see that often, right? So we're seeing some of that as well. But I would say, you know, the lines that were the most depressed are the ones that are, you know, seeing more rate. And then the question is, you know, is that even adequate, right? Is that even adequate with all the things that I just talked about? Saying that a rate is adequate today takes more judgment than it did 5 years ago. Right. 5 years ago, it was a little easier to depend on the actuarial tables, I think, than it is today. And, you know, we're one of the few businesses. I had this discussion with a broker recently, and we're one of the few businesses that, you know, if I said to you, David, you know, you're shopping for a car and, you know, I've got this great car for you and you could buy it for the same price that you bought it 7 years ago, you would say, wow, that's pretty good. Right. So in our business, you know, we say rates are up, but still, you know, it's the same price of maybe the same price it was in the last market where rates were up, which was, you know, 7-10 years ago, 2003, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I had a discussion with one of our underwriters this morning who said that, yeah, rates are up, but they're still not where they were in 2002.
Right.
So it's tough to say what's adequate, right? But, you know, you could measure by the losses that you're seeing, by the environment that you're in, and, you know, by the mission that our industry has, which is, you know, in an orderly way, diversify the losses of the global economy and smooth the losses of the global economy so that there are no shocks. And we want to, you know, we have to be able to perform that mission. In order to do that, recent years that I talked about before tell you that we didn't have enough money in the bucket to be able to do that. So, you know, I think that's a lot of what's driving things.
Yeah. And just finally, sort of on the macro factors, and you did, you know, you mentioned obviously interest rates and, you know, what we're seeing this year looks like sort of, you know, lower for longer interest rates. And how much, particularly when you're looking at sort of casualty and underwriting, how you're pricing that risk, how much of a factor is that? And how much does that sort of drive sustainability in terms of the longevity of the market conditions we're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, you know, our company specifically at Allied World, it doesn't come into play.
Right.
We're an underwriting company. We do not consider interest rates when we're underwriting accounts. You know, like I said, interest rates come and go. You know, you can't run a company long term factoring something that you can't control.
So, right.
So it doesn't affect us, but I would say as an industry, you know, there are always seems to be companies out there who, you know, think they could outrun underwriting losses with investment income. That never seems to work out well. But, you know, what's the effect that it's going to have? You know, I think overall, industry-wide, it's a factor that will help keep rates firm because the ability to cash flow underwrite is not there because of the lower interest rates in general. Yeah. So the companies that, you know, like to think that they could outrun underwriting performance will not be in a position to be able to say that they can do that. And there is a move, and you could see the move towards underwriting discipline because of that, right? You know, the industry has been disciplined, frankly, you know, a lot more disciplined than I've seen in the past. I mean, I've seen very few outliers as far as companies that feel they could cash flow underwrite. You know, there's still lots of carriers and lots of competition in the business, but the ability to cash flow underwrite, I just don't see it as a factor right now, and certainly not for us.
So in the current environment, and, you know, we've talked about the challenges your clients are facing, and we've talked about the, you know, the pricing dynamics that we think are going to be sustained in the insurance marketplace. So in that environment, how do you square the need to push for rate with the reality that, you know, in some segments, at least, your clients are faced with very restrictive budgets because of the economic downturn?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. It goes back to communication. We talk to many of our clients, and especially in our Bermuda operation, we have, you know, relationships with customers where we talk to them about the need for rate. And we try to, you know, really explain why that need is there to, you know, give the risk managers ammunition to talk to their CFOs and say, you know, this is what's needed in the industry, you know, and you know, industry has lost money several years and, you know, is dealing with the wildfires and hurricanes and all those things that you're seeing. So we try to really communicate why there's a need. It's not just arbitrary, right? It's real. And, you know, what our customers are doing is, you know, they're dealing with, like you say, you know, their budgets are being cut. And, you know, I have seen instances where they're buying less limit, you know, which is a tough place to have to be. There are also instances where, you know, we're getting to the point where some of our customers are now exploring captives and you know, larger self-insured retentions where they take some of the risks themselves. So there are mechanisms that you'll see in, you know, many times when the market tightens, it gets to be a harder market that our customers will use, and we will help them with, and we will advise them with that, and we will try to maybe write reinsurance for their captive and support them in that way, yeah, because we recognize what's going on, and it's becomes complex because there are many factors that we're trying to deal with here. You know, the adequacy of the insurance rates, the needs of our customers, the global economic situation. And so we try to balance those things. There's no direct answer to your question other than we try to listen and be good partners.
Yeah. And are there any sort of changes to existing program structures or, you know, where maybe you can have more alignment of risk and maybe that can help address some of the issues and helps put them in a better position in terms of price that carriers are going to charge?
Yeah. Well, I think the market was very, very soft for a long time. And what happens, especially with our Fortune 500 customers or, you know, some of our more sophisticated customers is I would say they, you know, I don't know if overbuy is the right term, but they buy more risk transfer.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's worth it. Right. It's cheaper. It's a better buy for them. So they buy more risk transfer than really, you know, might be the most efficient place for them. Right. So when you get into a market like this, one of the things that it does do is it makes all of us kind of relook at the risk profiles and relook at the buying behavior and say, okay, it's not an easy decision anymore to just say, hey, insurance is really cheap, so just buy a lot of it and we'll transfer all our risk to the insurance industry. So this is, you know, for the professional risk managers, this is actually a time for them to, you know, have an opportunity to really make a difference in their organizations and say, okay, you know, insurance is not as cheap as it was several years ago. So we really have to look at what is the right self-insured retention for our company? What is the right participation? What is the right limit, or were we overbuying limit because it was cheap? So what is the proper risk management program for our company? Okay, so I think that that's an exercise that many of our customers are going through right now. And, you know, we obviously, you know, we'll support them in that if, you know, they choose to go in those directions. And we understand it. I mean, if they come back to us and say, you know, if we offer, you know, a $20 million limit and they say, no, you know, we're only going to buy 10 because, you know, we've decided that our balance sheet is big enough to maintain that other 10 on our own. We say, hey, we totally understand that, and we'll support you, and, you know, you can have our 10. These are discussions that we're having, and they're the right discussions to have. They're good professional discussions. The brokers, obviously, you know, our broker partners are in the middle of a lot of these, and you know, also another good time for the brokers to, you know, show their differentiation and professionalism to come in and, you know, go through that exercise with us and their clients. And so to answer your question, I think you're seeing a lot of that going on. And what is the most efficient way to buy, given the fact that it's just not as cheap as it was?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm just switching gears, and I would like to go back and talk about COVID-19 a little bit. And I guess the initial focus when we're looking at industry exposure was very much on areas like business interruption and event cancellation. As we're now in the sort of the tightening of the pandemic's grip, maybe for a sort of second wave, where do you think the likeliest areas for claims from that second wave? Is it going to be a sort of different profile? Is it going to be more sort of on the professional line side? What do you think we might see?
Well, that's a tough one because it is very uncertain, you know, as what you may or may not see. I think a lot of it depends on how quick we come out of it, right? So, you know, the faster the recovery, you know, I think the less likely you're going to see some of what I would call the longer tail COVID claims, right? So like you appropriately outlined, you know, you have your short tail COVID claims and the event cancellation and some of the property policies that will cover virus. You know, you have those short term types of claims. In the longer term, I think as and if companies come back to the offices, you know, I think you have to keep an eye on how you do that, right? I think there's, you know, certainly an EPLI exposure on, you know, getting people back to the office and how you do it and do it the right way and making sure that, you know, you have the safety protocols and, you know, what are the responsibilities of the building owners? What are the responsibilities of the tenants? You know, and how do you bring that back, right? So, you know, that would be a line I think that, you know, we have to keep an eye on. You know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, is there a D&O exposure in the longer term? Well, you know, I mean, the stock market seems to keep hitting record highs, which
somehow
is amazing. So that'll help in that regard. But I think, you know, as you really talk about, you know, is there a possible D&O exposure? I think there will be suits that come in, so there will be legal expense, I think. But I also think it's kind of hard to say that this was something that management could have expected to happen.
Right.
You know, and didn't prepare for it properly, right? So, you know, that becomes a bit of a tougher thing to prove. But not to say there won't be some suits coming in. Yeah, on the casualty side, I think it's tough to say that, you know, you have, you know, systemic casualty losses here. But, you know, you may have some one-offs here and there. Those would be like the major areas, you know, professional lines. I would say, you know, we just have to wait and see, you know, whether or not there could be any cases made that professional services to companies somehow miss this or somehow drop the ball on COVID, you know, when you have the whole world that really is caught by surprise.
And then obviously we talked a lot about sort of market conditions and a lot of that has been around in the improving pricing environment. And as you look across the market, where do you see the best opportunities for profitable growth as a company? And I mean, how much of that is where there's been retrenchment maybe from some of your competitors and, you know, shortening limits and, you know, how has that sort of created opportunities for Allied World as a company to come in and maybe to grow?
Well, I think the reduction of capacity, the shortening of limits and just the outright exiting of marketplaces that we're seeing much of that in the London marketplace. You know, we've seen some in the U.S., but the industry wide reduction in capacity, you know, has really been, I think it's such a key driver in seeing where the market's going. Because as I said before, it brings so much more demand into the marketplace, right? And as I said, you know, where four carriers could have filled out a tower, now you need 15.
Right.
That makes a lot more carriers relevant and more carriers who in the past couldn't really compete because they didn't have the big capacity, you know, now can go in there and compete in the marketplace.
Right.
In some ways, there's more competition. It's just the fact that you need more carriers to be able to fill these things out. And so for us, I mean, if you follow us as a company over the past several years, you know, we had exited businesses that we thought were non-performing. And so we got rid of some of those distractions. And, you know, we were always very happy with our limits profile, given the size of our company. So we're not, you know, we're not in a position where we need to go out there and say, oh, you know, we're exiting this business and exiting that business, or where we have to pull capacity way back in some of these areas. So for us, we like the businesses that we're in. We think our best opportunity right now as a company is to continue to be very, very good at the stuff that we're good at, right? And just make sure that we're bringing value to our customers, value to our brokers, that our people are responsive and resilient, and that we are in the marketplace with the lines of business that we know well and that we're good at. And so we're focusing on that, right? We're trying not to get distracted with other things. We're not spending a lot of time thinking about, at this point, should we go open a whole bunch of new geographies, right? Should we launch a whole bunch of new product, right? To me, you know, right now, those would be distracting from a marketplace that really needs us, right? Really. And so, you know, we're going to focus on those lines of business that we're good at. And we're very good at D&O. We're very good at excess casualty. And, you know, we're very good at property. You know, all the businesses that we're in right now, I can't think of one that we don't want to be in.
Yeah, fair enough. And if in any of those, in your sort of, you know, your core focus, you know, where you are very much looking at staying in and and being relevant. And I mean, if you did want to increase line size or, you know, look to put more capacity to work in some of those areas, I mean, how easy is that for you to do as part of, obviously, you know, Fairfax, much larger conglomerate kind of company these days than when you were a standalone company? Do you sort of have the same degree of flexibility and responsiveness as you did as a standalone company?
I would say being part of the Fairfax family has been fantastic for us. They're great partners. Prem and Andy and the team there are very, very true to their word when they say that, you know, they buy companies and allow those companies to run themselves, right?
Yeah.
And run independently. And, you know, we have found that has been the case. I mean, we're running our company independently, Allied World. You know, we're very happy to be owned by Fairfax, and it gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility. I mean, you know, first of all, we've got plenty of capital, right? So if we wanted to go write more business, we really don't have to call over to Fairfax and say, can you give us more capital? You know, we have plenty of capital of our own to allocate. But if we did need it, you know, we'd certainly have that discussion. And if it was for all the right reasons and it was for building profitable business out, you know, I'm sure we would get a positive response. But, you know, there's great communication. There's a lot of trust, and it gives us, you know, good flexibility.
Very good. And you talked about, you know, the number of new competitors, but also the need for capacity in the marketplace. I mean, written a fair amount about, you know, either mooted startups or, you know, scale-ups of existing platforms in recent months. And what's your sense? Do you think that if that all comes in, do you think that's going to have a meaningful impact in terms of market dynamics? Or is the need for capacity great enough that it's just going to kind of get absorbed and continue to see this dynamic?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, we talk about that pretty often. You know, if you look at the numbers on it, you know, in the U.S., the size of our market is $700 billion, right? You know, there's been capital that has come out of the business. It has trapped capital right now and some of the mechanisms that are out there. So, and then there may be some new capital come in. But, you know, the net new capital, when you think about the capital that is trapped or has left the market, you know, let's say it's $10 billion, right, which is a number I've heard bantered around. I think it's probably pretty close to being accurate. Just in the U.S. alone, there's $700 billion of capital, right? So $10 billion comes in. I'm not sure how much of a real difference that's going to make. And in what we do, there's just a lot of barriers to entry. You know, some of the capital is talking about, oh, we're going to come in and we're going to go in the E&S business in the U.S. Well, to be in the E&S business in the U.S. takes a lot of time and effort. There's a lot of states that you have to operate in. There's a lot of relationships that you have to have. There's a tremendous amount of operational capacity that you need. You know, even if you forget about the front side, you're talking about churning thousands of submissions and issuing thousands of policies and handling thousands of claims, right? So the barriers to entry in the E&S business in the U.S. are, in my view, quite large, right? So when you hear the capital come in, they say, hey, we just want to get new capital. We just want to go in the E&S business in the U.S. because we think that's, you know, good business. Okay, you know, let's see. I don't know that there'll be that much of an impact there. You know, I think a lot of the capital, you know, sees an avenue into the business through Bermuda in a reinsurance capacity, which I think, you know, frankly, is a wiser move. Because you could put the capital to work faster. You have access to a growing marketplace in Bermuda right now, not only in Bermuda, but worldwide. You know, it's a good platform to have. So, you know, I think that's probably a wiser move. And then, so if it comes in reinsurance, okay, there are a couple things to remember. You know, one is the market started to firm and is firming in the absence of the reinsurance market firming.
Right.
Right. So the reinsurance market is not the driver of the firming direct market that we have today. In fact, the reinsurance market is really just starting to move now to firm. So I think if you see new money coming into reinsurance, I don't think it'll be something that drives the market in the opposite direction, because it's not the reason that it's moving to begin with.
Right.
And, so there'll be some opportunities for that capital, but I don't see it being enough to really move the industry, number one. And also, I think if you look at where it's going to, you know, where it's likely to come into the business, it's not coming into the areas that are moving the market to begin with. So, you know, it's there. Yeah, you know, when rates are up, there's always talk of new capital coming in. And, you know, I'll tell you, the teams that I'm hearing about are, you know, responsible folks who, you know, I think will likely do a very good job for their capital.
Yeah. And obviously, you mentioned reinsurance there and, you know, some of the capital formation in Bermuda potentially. And reinsurance pricing is beginning to get some momentum. And obviously, you know, the retro market is already very hard. As a company, you have capabilities, certainly on the reinsurance side and some on the retro side. So, I mean, is this an area where you could kind of turn on the taps and maybe to build your business on that side again?
You know, our reinsurance team, you know, they'll shrink that book when they feel like they can't get adequate rate, and they'll grow it when they feel they can. And this is a time where in some pockets they feel they can. So, you know, we're seeing more business meet our hurdle rates in reinsurance. And so we're more prone to come on more treaties right now. And so we have been growing there. We think it's the right time to look at doing that. You know, it's not the market that you see on the direct side, but it's certainly a market where there are more opportunities than there were. And we're optimistic about it. And the team, you know, that book for us will ebb and flow, right? It'll grow. It'll come down, you know, depending on the marketplace. And you have the luxury of doing that in reinsurance, where, you know, in the direct side, it's much, much harder to do something like that, right? It takes more time. There are more relationships. But, you know, so that reinsurance company within Allied World, it's a great diversifier from our direct insurance business, right?
And in terms of capital allocation, is that something that you could quickly sort of, again, sort of gear up and look to that opportunity to expand?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have those discussions all the time, capital allocation between reinsurance and insurance. And, you know, the reinsurance team, you know, has opportunities sometimes that we don't have on the insurance side. And so, you know, we'll allocate capital there, and, you know, especially on the, you know, the cat reinsurance side.
Yeah.
You know, we feel like you get into that, you know, we could be more nimble in that business on the reinsurance side than we could on the insurance side. So, you know, we'll tend to, you know, allocate more of the capital for the cat business over to Kevin and the reinsurance team there.
Well, thanks, Lou. That was great. And thanks for being such an engaging interviewee. And thanks to everyone for listening. We've got a great pipeline of podcasts, so do keep checking in at www.theinsurer.com for those and our other high-value content.